Hello, welcome to another episode of Android's Amazing Podcast. I'm your host, James Santana, and always I'm joined by my lesser sidekick, Hunter Van Lero.
That's me. Sorry, we have cameras, so I'm pointing.
Don't act like people can see you on camera.
Hey, man, we don't normally record with cameras. It's the first time I get to see your beautiful face in so long.
I know. And guys, we are brought to you by Andrew's Amazing Comics down in Save in New York. So let's start the show up. Normally, we start the show off with some news, but we have the very talented podcaster, future comic writer, all-around cool person, Tommy. Oh, my God. I said this before, Tommy. I was going to butcher your last name in a text this morning when I was texting you about the show.
Trembath, if you want to try taking that.
Thank you. Trembath. Tommy Trembath. I told you, I was super worried. I'm bad at names. Ask Hunter, when we do like the rundown at the end of the show of like book reviews, I butcher every last name on every
creator. When I was in the office when we were recording, I would read the names. Even I'm not that great, but I commit to it. And I'm just like, fuck it, it's gonna be this. Like,
it's funny though, like in front of everything else, I always get asked, so is it Tommy or Tomy?
I've never heard Tomy before.
Yeah.
I mean, Tommy. Presumably if they ask, Tomy must be a name. But Tommy, for sure, I picked it up as Tom.
So did I. I mean, to be fair, for everyone else listening, me and Hunter have listened to Tommy and her podcast, Ultra Mega, way back when she first started. When Ultra Mega was still a book.
Well, it's giant-sized violence now, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And because your intro and outro, that's now like a song on my playlist I play all the time. It's the song I used to write. Yes, you got me into them. So I listen to them when I'm writing my comic and stuff like that. I love it.
Yeah, I feel like I just stumbled into like the perfect tokusatsu song, like shake your fist at the sky, refuse to die, or let them make you small. I'm like, that's everything about what I'm into.
Yeah, yes, I listen to a lot of Good Kid when I write. I don't know if you've heard of Good Kid. It's a lot of high energy, a lot of anime inspired music. A lot of their art and music videos are Ghibli inspired. Good Kid. I highly recommend them, especially when you're writing action scenes. Very fun to just get the energy going. And they fueled the last issue of Nebulon.
But we're not here to talk about me or Hunter and our stuff. That's episode like
that's later.
It's like an episode in 2 weeks. But we brought on Tommy for multitude reasons. One, I wanted her on the show for a long time, and I couldn't find a topic for her to get on. But now I do. With her book coming out, When We Transform, and her webtoon coming out around the same time, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
We got an advanced reader copy, and it was fun, really good. And we're here to pimp out and talk about When We Transform and all the stuff behind it. So, guys, sit back, enjoy this fun interview, and yeah. So, Tommy, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and to the audience?
Yeah, all right. So, as mentioned, I'm Tommy Trimbath. I'm the host of both Giant Sized Violence, a Toku Comics podcast, as well as Transcending Comics, which is the first and so far only trans comic book podcast out there dedicated specifically to trans representation in comics, both in the creator space and in characters on panel. I just started a company to cover all that called Keymaster Collective, LLC, and now we're putting out our first comic that combines both of my main passions in podcasting. So When We Transform is a tokusatsu inspired trans narrative that takes a character that was something like a henshin hero, Power Rangers, what have you, that gets stuck in their transformation sequence for 30 years. And when they come back on the other side, they find a world where even though things are really terrible and tough for them, a lot of things have progressed and things are more accepting now. So they're able to better come to terms with who they are, understand feelings they never understood before. And now they're back a little bit closer to when they first disappeared. And sorry to give the spoilers here for 7 pages into When We Transform. But yeah, it's a coming out tale between a mother and a daughter who she thought was a long lost son.
Yeah, it was awesome to read. I loved it. And then that's by the way, great synopsis. Normally we ask you to pimp it out and give a soft pitch for the books. But that was awesome. That was the best ever pitch we've had on the show so far. It was a really good story, and we'll throw you some feedback from this before we get into questions and stuff. It was funny because you sent me and Hunter both the copies, and I was like, oh, which one do I read first? I'm like, all right, you know what? I read When We Transform, which was originally called Dear David. I found it in my my Dropbox the other day. I was like, oh yeah, Tommy did send me this like a long time ago. And then I read the webtoon, figuring out now I know which you're supposed to read first in chronological order. But it was awesome. It was awesome. It was heartfelt. It does feel like a one shot, but it feels like a very heartfelt, like, mother-daughter story. And it's like, yeah, it's a coming out story, but at the end of the day, it's a family story. It's both their journeys you get to see, and it's really cool. I like that a lot. Yeah, it was awesome. I loved it from start to finish. And it was cool. I like the webtoon. I'm assuming there's gonna be more for the webtoon.
Yeah.
Can't leave us like that. The ending was too, oh no, what's gonna happen? So I need more.
Yeah, sorry. I meant to just like do a crude lettering myself of the later chapters, but I at least have inks for the first three and then the next chapter or two written after that. To give people a little bit of an idea of the progression of this. So as James mentioned, the comic started as just a 6-page short called Dear David, which was just the story from the mom's point of view. Like, this was when I was still learning how to make comics. I made one short about the siren pirate character that I didn't care about. I just needed to get something out. So the first thing I made wasn't my magnum opus or something, or I could fail on something else before going to the thing I wanted to make forever. And in it, there's not really any trans themes in that itself in those first 6 pages. Cause when I wrote it and like when we were conceptualizing When We Transform, I wasn't aware I was trans yet.
So when did the process start with the start of Dear David then? How long ago? What's the timeline?
Oh, it's been a minute. I mean, there's been
was it COVID times?
Like, yeah, it was a okay. COVID project of sorts.
In the dark ages.
Let's see. I want to say it was 2021, early-ish 2021.
All right, we're getting out of there.
Specifically tell you, it's weird, but the Monster Hunter movie had just come out on DVD.
Mila Jovovich, baby.
I had the main idea of like the time lost hero while watching Monster Hunter on the DVD player in the minivan I was driving at the time, like with a girlfriend in the back seat. I'm like, whoa, what if someone got stuck in their transformation sequence like that?
Sometimes inspiration strikes at the weirdest times. If you see my notes or hear what me and James say on the phone, we get inspiration everywhere. But
yeah, but my co-creator Jason and I, we had originally been planning something pretty similar to World of Nebulon. Like, it was going to be an anthology magazine of sorts, and this was just going to be like David's intro story, setting things up. Like, I'd put this all out there like through the point of view of the mom, because Robert Kirkman gives the advice of like, if you want to get into comics, don't write a full length thing. People aren't going to read a full length thing if you're trying to get published, right? Like a 5-page story, because that's as much as any publisher is going to read of your pitch. So like, that's what we started with, trying to figure out how to write a 5 or 6 page story. How do I put something this big, like explain what our henshin hero team is, what the rules are, what happened to my character in 6 pages? I'm like, wait, what if it's not from their point of view? What if it's from the mom's point of view? Like, what's been told to her? And that's how the framing started to come about. The rest of the book was going to be like shorts featuring other tokusatsu inspired heroes. Like, Jason's got a great one that's like a take on Beetleborgs. I have ones that make appearances in the comic that are kind of like, yeah, one's like Kamen Rider, the other's like Ultraman meets Evangelion. They were going to have shorts too. But ultimately, like, it just wasn't coming together, trying to write six-page introductions that would then work into one big explosive crossover, like 12 to 20 page story at the end. So instead, that's going to be stuff we work towards in the webtoon.
Yeah. How many issues of the webtoon do you have planned out?
So I will confess, it's an idea that kind of keeps growing. Okay. Like, when I had first made this idea, I'm like, okay, maybe I want David to be in the future by like chapter 3. But then I started to realize like the impact of what David loses from like missing out on the 90s and the team that like made him want to become a superhero. Like, that kind of loses its punch if everything is just like three chapters that are each only like 5 to 7 pages equivalent in modern comics. So instead, I'm going to make most of the first season take place in the 90s, kind of building up to David's disappearance and like kind of introducing the world. Like, literally chapter three starts to play with the monster of the week elements and like, wait, why do we have teenagers fighting these characters or these monsters instead of like Marines?
Sometime in the full issue, they mentioned the crisis event. That would be what you're talking about, where they get transported fully in. You're going to wait till however long to get into that, the crisis event?
Yeah, the crisis event, we've always kind of seen that as like an anniversary special that happens for our team, the Light Patrol, but in one of the years where David's missing. So like when he comes back, the big impact that like changes the world is like their team doesn't exist anymore. And they can't make more Light Patrol teams. I mean, just like most Toku heroes, there's been like dozens of incarnations from them at this point. But I guess bearing the lead for probably a year at least down in storytelling. But basically, some scientist figures out the only reason we keep getting invaded by different alien species every year is because we have something they want. So if we get rid of this power source, we're not going to be as tempting to potential invaders. So right. Like, yeah, while David's gone, the ability to transform and make these powers goes away.
The government tries to get rid of Zordon.
Yeah. So now they're back and like, it's a big deal that now there's one person that can start powering these giant robots again, or like they can power a whole city with just the device in their chest.
In the future timeline, the Days of Future Past of sorts, is the, they're not the Light Patrollers anymore, right? It's the blonde and I guess it's the two blonde characters that ride on the motorcycle when they pick David up. Are those from what it says on the panel or the page, it's something like they are the people who replace them in the future, which is 2027, give or take. Does that come from the government giving up on trying to get rid of Zordon, or does that come from another artifact that comes down, or how does that? Or is that too much spoiler talk?
I think I can get into some of that, because a lot of it's just like world building that might not even make it onto the page. And I love talking about this.
We feel that. We got a Bible that's 27 pages too long.
But one thing you just said there, I had never thought that people would like see David with these other heroes and then see them with these other like queer kids and think they were the same people, because like they're not actually. Those are just David's friends at school, and then these are the superheroes that are filling in for them.
Oh, my, so, like, my bad.
No, that's good to know. I hadn't thought of that.
The way that the panel sets it up, it looks like, oh, these people found me, and I know they're heroes in that regard. That's where I thought it was going. But it's cool that they're not, which means more character dynamics to explore with the other characters.
Mm.
So that's fun.
Kind of what's going on in this modern day that David finds himself in, and just by the way, I'm going to refer to them as David for most of this, unless it is something from their future perspective as Dana. So I made the character. I can choose when it's appropriate to then name them. So two heroes are kind of filling their place. One of them is this character, Cavil Rider, who is a very obvious, like, pastiche on Kamen Rider, but has a bit more of a RoboCop element to them to make them stand out. And they have a long-term partnership with InfraOne, this giant robot Ultraman-style hero that, like, rather than piloting a robot or becoming a big being of light, he turns into, like, a giant metal cyborg thing and leaves these terrible, like, giant husks every time he leaves behind, because it's, like, kind of organic.
Oh, kind of so, like the Attack on Titan, where the bones are just sitting there when they're, like, steaming out or whatever.
Exactly, that's awesome. Yeah.
That's got to be visually very cool to see.
So, like, there's... they're kind of the only ones that can do what the Light Patrol used to. We have Cavil Rider going around solo, taking on these small ground level threats, and then InfraOne only comes in when they're not able to de-escalate the situation, and like you kill a monster and oh crap, this is one of those that grows when you kill him. And like, so like these people like should have retired forever ago. Like there's some Evangelion trauma in the background. Like, yeah. And they have this cool partnership where the Cavil Rider's motorcycle turns into the gun that's used in the finishing move for InfraOne.
We love doing that kind of nonsense. Oh man.
Love it.
But yeah,
I love it.
Like, they're kind of like, what if Shinji from Evangelion had a mom that was like, nope, and just took their kid out of there when they started to see all that PTSD building up. And now they're just the only one that can deal with threats like this. So right. They have to come in. They have to leave their support group of previous superheroes and, yeah, get back into action.
Yeah, that support group aspect, you brought that up in the mom's perspective from the When We Transform, I guess, oversized one-shot, question mark. And are any of those characters kids or past and present kids, alive status unknown? Are any of those characters going to be represented in it, or are they just kind of background fodder to progress the mother story?
So one of them is going to be an important character, the one that kind of reaches out and says that your son saved my kids' lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That one's more like a support group for the families of superhumans or children that became superhumans. And yeah, she's the parent of the boy that David saved in the panel when he disappears. There's like a little kid that's just picking out of half this armor.
That's an interesting shot to see, because from what you just said, it's almost a random kid. How did they get the armor? Is it a cosplay, or is it like a oops, I grabbed it by accident kind of situation, and now I'm in the middle of the nonsense?
So that's our character of Sharkfighter, and they're from Sea Control, which is like our
Okay. I thought I was going crazy. When I read Sea Control on there, I was like, well, did I miss something? Glad I did not. I'm glad it was a reference to something. I thought I misread something. I was like, Sea Control. I was like, it was the Light Patrol, right? Like, what happened?
And that might get explored sooner rather than later, not in comics, but in an audio drama Jason's working on. Because, yeah, Jason's going that route in his writing career, and like, he's making awesome stuff. But anyway, like, one of those Beetleborg kids straight up dies shortly beforehand, but they like wish him back to life, and now he's a zombie, just like still going about, but like, he's got his intelligence about him. He just has to deal with all the things of having a dead like body,
decaying flesh.
Yeah,
the stinks like a mother. Oof.
Sharkfighter, who you see like on the board in my comic, on like the hoverboard, and he'll show up elsewhere. He's like our Punisher, but really lame. Like, we need to really express that this guy's a loser, and you would
he
not
uses water guns.
Worse yet, so after that incident, like, he's so traumatized that he never de-transformed. So even though he's now like late 30s or 40s, under his suit, he's still a 12-year-old kid, or at least he looks like one, because he's just been stuck in that suit. So
yeah, so when you're in the suit, time and space kind of freezes up, because with the mechanized thing where they got frozen in their sequence, that was kind of that was a really cool element that I didn't even think about. Like, when you think about transformations, especially when you watch Power Rangers, I'm not a huge Kamen Rider guy, I'm mostly a Power Rangers guy. But when you read and watch Power Rangers, the transformation sequence is almost instantaneous. Sometimes you get the cool little repeated video that they throw into every episode or every few episodes. And even our transformation sequence in our book is almost instant. It's just kind of like a few panels, and then he's like, boom, there he is. So the idea that they get stuck in there isn't even a concept that I really thought about. That's a really cool thing to kind of dig into for a tokusatsu. Like, you can stay in the suit and not age, potentially. And if you get stuck in there because you potentially double mechanized or double transformed, I don't think I'd take those powers if I accidentally gets thrown 30 years in time. You know what I mean?
And like, we really want to play with every trope and aspect of tokusatsu and explore, why does this exist? Like, why do they attack the same city every time with the Monster of the Week formula? Why don't the villains attack when the heroes are transforming? Why do they just give them 5 minutes to play?
Why do they
the
let
stock
them stand
footage?
And yell?
And the answer is because bad things happen when you mess with that stuff. Like, space and time is weird. Don't touch these people when they transform.
I can imagine a scene coming up where like maybe one of the Battle Beast style characters. I saw the Wolfman.
Grizzlord is his name.
Grizzlord, oh, rock and roll. They let's say maybe someone like that reaches out and touches it, and their hand gets like cut off for like a millisecond because they flip in and out of existence in that little thing, and then there's like a floating hand drifting in the morphing sequence forever. Like, that would be kind of an interesting thing to see. And like, do you have any play on that? Like, just like a shock factor, like you blip and your fingers are gone.
Ooh,
Hunter likes to pitch ideas to everybody he talks to, so
I get excited. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that working with the number of characters, though, so we can squeeze that in.
Hell yeah.
Like in this case, the big threat that was going to come back in the future, like David and Grizzlord come back at the same time, and the reason you see them all big like that is, like, we call our otherworld space the Chromatic Nexus. Yeah, it's the Morphin Grid, whatever.
We call ours Nebulous Space, so it's all about the same nonsense.
Grizzlord comes back, and they've got, like, 30 years of energy from being stuck in this place back.
Oh, man, just built up.
And, like, the big crux of it was going to be, like, so there's this safeguard on Cavil Rider's bike that lets them know, like, what's the escalation risk, and if it's going to, like, really go bad, it's like it won't let them use the final shot. And this is the first time they come across a giant monster that, like, the safety goes off. There's so much energy in this guy that if you kill him while he's giant, he's going to become a bigger, badder Grizzlord.
That's an interesting concept to see, just like a planet sized Grizzlord, just like fine, and like Galactus. That's very cool.
But, as you guys can tell, Tavi's great at doing interviews because she also runs an interview podcast, two of them. So to pivot from your book for a second, what got you into podcasting? That's where me and Hunter first heard you originally.
Oh, yeah. I started reading the Ultra Mega comic book. And I was like, how is nobody talking about this book? It's insane that nobody's mentioned it on any podcast yet. I haven't seen any YouTube videos besides, like, you know, Uncanny Omar, like doing like a video showcase or something. I haven't seen anybody talking about this book, and I got it like a year or two after it came out, and I don't even remember the hype besides we covered it on our show briefly. So I was just Googling and looking up like Ultra Mega, and I saw the logo for your podcast, and I was like, oh, they already got four episodes in. They covered all, you know, four issues. And then I was like, all right, cool. So I started listening to them. And then all of a sudden you released a new episode, and I was like, it's not about Ultra Mega. There's no way there's a fifth issue that I missed. And then you guys were spinning it out into something else. And then you took a break for a bit. And then you came back with something very different that we will definitely get into in just a few minutes.
Love that. Want to comment on the interview thing. This is my first time being interviewed on a podcast. Like, I've done guest appearances elsewhere. But one, thank you for having me on as, like, my first people interviewing me.
No,
you're welcome.
As for podcasting, like, how got into that, so me and Jason, we met through the Mutants and Masterminds subreddit on like during the pandemic. He had posted something wanting to do like a Power Rangers tabletop campaign before the RPG existed, and so I messaged him on it, and we started talking over Discord and PSN and like pitching out this idea where he and I would like each run a team of Rangers and then cross over, and kind of beside the point, but in the process of making things, we found out that we loved all of the same stuff. Like, we'd read the same comic runs, like Invincible and Ultimate Spider-Man. We both had this fondness for like tokusatsu, like Big Bad Beetleborgs, and like everything Fox Kids, and just like, it was like meeting myself in the form of like an awesome dude all the way in Virginia. Like, so during 2020, like pandemic, he comes to me with the idea of starting a podcast to cover the entire New 52, or attempt it. Yeah,
that's a tough. I've actually thought about that idea too. I was like, New 52 was my entrance into comic books. We got to talk about it, but half of them are crazy, hard to find, and filled with Rob Liefeld. So it's a little, and James doesn't like it.
And I really think that made me a way better writer and podcaster, and just sharpened my critical eye. Because the problem is, like, the New 52 isn't like a handful of good books and then a ton of terrible books. It's a handful of good books, a handful of terrible books, and then just a lot of mediocre books that like don't really swing in either direction.
Like a lot of stuff.
And so like that really made us figure out like what makes a comic stand out more to us. Like, what is this missing? And like, yeah, it was very helpful, and Jason made it very easy to get into it because they offered to do all the editing for me. So I'm like, okay, I just have to read comics and then get online and talk about comics? Yeah, I was going to do that anyway. So
yeah, that's what James gets to do. I do all the editing, unless I'm not on the episode.
But yeah, then Jason got COVID for a while and things were hairy. Their immune system was just like kind of rough there and they were getting sick more often. So the podcast, like, first I started taking over editing duties and then it just kind of fell by the wayside as we got more into other projects. But it did what we wanted to. Like, it showed us how to format a podcast, like all the editing and recording tools, how to publish it and tweet on our new episodes and all that. And it was around this time that I was looking like, okay, what, I want to do something different, or I don't want to do anything that like other people are doing. Because yeah, when we started the New 52 cast, another New 52 podcast started within 2 months of us.
Was it the New 52 and You from Alex Fasciani? That's the one I know about. I
think so.
Okay.
So yeah, around that time though, I'm in a car with someone on their way to get their COVID vaccine. I've just picked up this Ultra Mega book because I was there to check out Ultraman by Kyle Higgins. And someone's like, oh, hey, this thing's cool. And like, that, is this what you want? And I didn't know what was in store for me, but that comic was everything I wanted and more. And just like, loved its 60 page format. It's manga art style. Just like the combination of writer and artist on it was amazing. And it was giving this like full story in one issue and doing like manga and doing an oversized first issue and just was like everything I wanted to see us doing in the industry. And like, okay, if nothing else, I can be the first podcast dedicated to this book because this is obviously gonna run forever. It's so good. And like,
oops,
the book had good sales, and I'm still told that James Herron is working on issue 5, that there will be more Ultra Mega.
So behind the scenes stuff, because I work at a comic shop, James Herron and his stuff, he's taking over Transformers now.
What?
Yes, he's taking over Transformers with Danny Warren Johnson. Going forward, I think issue 6, not the last one, not the new one that was just solicited, the one beforehand, they're taking over as a duo for the book. So we may have another delay in Ultra Mega.
That's fine, because that Transformers run rules.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Warren Johnson, for sure.
Getting James Herron on that? That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, okay, so they're both doing the book.
All right, well, you know what? I can combine my interests and shift Giant Size Violence to be a Transformers book now.
Giant Size Robots, it's already there.
Also, every female Transformer is a trans woman.
Yes.
That's in canon. Like, the Autobots and Decepticons didn't have gender. They just found that on a planet somewhere. And like, oh, we'll take some of that. So
we'll take some of that gender.
Like, this ain't Cisformers. This is Transformers, dang it. All right. Anyway, where were we? Giant Size Violence.
Podcasting. Yes.
4 issues in, the book stops. But like, James Herron had mentioned in the letters column some other cool like tokusatsu things, like Kaiju Max, which I'll have an upcoming episode on. I started to find really cool stuff that was like related to it, like a Hakaider, which is like Japanese RoboCop meets Terminator meets Satan. Freaking rules.
You have to watch it. It's fantastic. I love that movie. It's awesome.
And yeah, then like what really helped was like the podcast had kind of gone on pause mostly because like I just hadn't gotten around to it because it's passion project. Also, as I was starting to transition, like at first I was really self-conscious about my voice because like, you know, anytime I call tech support, people assume I'm a guy. And now I'm fine with it. Like I've accepted my voice for what it is. But I was like, okay, maybe I need to wait until like I go through voice training to feminize it. So like, I don't just, people don't assume I'm a guy all the time, especially if I'm going by a name like Tommy. But then Melissa Flores, as she was launching Dead Lucky, tweeted something about like, oh yeah, any podcast looking for me as a guest? I'm like, well, okay, like, I'll take this. Sounds cool. And that was before I found out, wait a minute, this person worked on Power Rangers for 10 years? I just thought she was doing a black market narrative book. And then, like, as I did research, I'm like, this lady is amazing. And, like, I just stumbled into this opportunity. So, like, that really kept me going there. Like, I couldn't pass up an opportunity like that. So I'm like, all right, I'm starting to go by the new name. So I just kept on going with whatever opportunities I could get. Like, was really lucky to land Brandon Easton around his Kamen Rider book around that time too.
Oh, that was a good episode. I like Easton's words he had for what he was had planned for Kamen Rider and like his energy for it. It was cool.
And through all of this, I was like really grappling with the experience that started to crack my egg and help me come to terms with being trans. And y'all will know all about that from my my eventual coming out episode, which I called yes. It's Morphin Time.
It was aptly named.
Yes.
And yeah, it was this otherworldly experience, admittedly drug induced.
That's when the best epiphanies come, right?
Yeah.
You gotta let go of everything.
If you're a Grant Morrison fan, this was like my Kathmandu experience of like meeting aliens and gods and finding out time's a flat circle and being like, you need to write about this. For a year, I couldn't like just tell people that. Like, it's weird enough telling someone about a dream you've had, but if you try and tell people like everyone is the same person and time moved backwards and forwards and I was a Power Ranger and Bo Burnham for a minute, like you'll sound crazy. So like I started to find songs that like would kind of trigger the mental state sometimes in a scary way.
It was a very well-produced episode of a podcast. It gave me chills. It made mm-hmm. me feel all the things as I was listening. I was like, I gotta step up my game. Like, this is unbelievable how much this one person was able to get this one solo episode. Solo episodes are the scariest. I don't know how you managed to power through and produce like the best podcast I've ever listened to. Like, it was just very well put together. Usually I listen to a bunch of comedians, you know, talk and make me laugh, but like every once in a while I listen to a podcast that just makes me have feelings, and it's tough sometimes. You know.
Yeah, that's really the goal, helping people like come to terms with whatever they've got going on. Like, I've had other trans friends, bisexual friends tell me like how much it meant to them. And if you like that style, that is something I'm trying to do more of. Like, we can get into it at some other point, but I had another experience like that, sans drugs, the day I started transcending comics, like no drugs, and I had like a vision or astral projected or some kind of spiritual experience. Probably just a fever dream, because it did happen while I was sick, but unlike anything else I'd experienced.
A real fever dream.
So I could adapt that into something, and I might after the launch of my first comic, because I got writing advice for the comic in that experience. There you go. But
and that's who'd you get the advice from? In the what was it, like a manifestation of Grant Morrison's beard or something? Like, what was the
not Grant Morrison's beard, but Grant Morrison himself? Or there,
to be fair,
off the reflective head.
Yeah, Grant Morrison is a multiversal construct. He's in every universe at all points.
Wow. Like, I hope you don't mind me just going tangent after tangent here, but like,
no, we don't mind.
That's not an interview.
I read The Invisibles issue like 4 or something the night before, and like that's the Neo, you're in a Matrix moment. Like, they get shown the world through the eyes of a pigeon and like just find out what reality really is. And like, my mind was reeling from like another weird experience the day before. I wake up the next day feeling sick, take work off early, start laying down on my couch. And I don't know if y'all have ever had the experience of, like, closed-eye visuals. Like, you kind of squint your eyes mostly, and you start seeing trippy stuff. Like, especially if you're watching TVs or, like, a light show of some sort. I started having that, saw a reflection of myself in the couch I was staring at, and made eye contact with this other me. And next thing I know, I'm in, like, some underwater space. And then I'm flying through the air in first person, and not like in a dream state where you have some level of agency or control. This was all like seeing this thing, not having any control over where I was looking, turning my head. And while it wasn't like wind on my face or anything, my equilibrium was matching up with the movements and the barrel rolls and the spirals exactly. And so like I was fairly conscious at the time. Like, I was aware that this was just like that weird semi-dream space of like, if I open my eyes too much, I'm gonna come out of this. If I go too much to sleep, I'm gonna fall out of this.
Yeah, you gotta hit that nice middle ground.
I later like kind of crashed into a beach and realized I was witnessing the memories of this like seemingly dying bald man that was buried in the sand that I thanked for his memories. And then like the sand swallows him up. I'm back underwater. The island he was on grows ahead like a turtle, but looks just like him, and it swims off. And Next thing you know, I'm back.
You said sans drugs?
Yeah, no drugs in this. I was 100% sober. I swear to God. I was doing Smurfing time. If there was any acid or anything involved, I'd be open to that. But I'm then like back in the plane experiencing this sensation of flight, spiraling out of control. And then I'm seeing through the eyes of a presumably Superman or a character with their powers, trying to imagine like how they can stop this, because there's no dream physics here. They're like, if I just fly up and catch that, I'm just going to wreck the plane. That's not how planes work. And like seeing them play through all these scenarios in their head of how they can stop this. And they start flying around me like in a circle over and to the side and like just making a sphere flying so fast that like it creates centrifugal force to balance out the plane and like allow me to glide. And as I'm envisioning this thing moving super fast all around me and controlling my direction, like something kind of snaps. I'm like, oh, this might be like a form of like multiversal travel here, at least in some Grant Morrison sense of like thinking of an idea and it taking you place to place, like through the power of an idea itself and focusing on it. I saw some multiversal stuff, some eldritch gods, some like world where the earth and everything in it is surrounded by this red pillar of existence that's like God slash the collective consciousness just staying over and over. They believe themselves into existence. They believe themselves into existence. They believe themselves into existence. So as long as one creature believes that they exist, existence continues. And as I'm seeing this, I'm like, wait a minute. This is a lot like that Invisibles issue I read last night. I could, like, if I can envision Superman saving me, maybe I can get some answers from the source itself. And like my eyes, I mentioned, were like kind of half closed through this. All of a sudden, the lights dim and brighten three times in a row. In the very, very notable Scottish accent, I hear, "Well, there we are. Torin, that was it." And I'm like in this presence of Grant Morrison, or like my mental projection of him. And like,
how tall did you make him?
Good. That's a space in size didn't exist in this world. But like, you know, I was starstruck at first, and then I just asked them for like basic advice, told them like this was the day I was gonna start transcending comics. And like I got this advice from my mental projection of Grant Morrison on like using my podcast to like speak myself into existence, or speak the version of me that I want to present to the world out there into the ether. And like I had talked about my comic idea of like wanting to take this and like have this physical release, but also like launch it through Webtoon and like pay for early access digital service. And they're like, yeah, that's great, that'll give you a nice international audience, expand its reach, but like you need to have a print version of it, because that's like, that's part of the magic that's required to bring it into existence. And like I got to ask the question of like, okay, if everyone's the same person and therefore you and I are the same person, like what would you be doing in my position? And just like got similar advice, a nice pat on the back, and started like waking up and seeing this figure that was Grant Morrison shift into like all these other recognizable kind of bald figures, seeing the universe in the eyes of this other being, and saying over and over again, like this phrase of seeing the world outside of you, I am you. Like the simplest statement to reveal God. Like there's the I am that lets you know you exist, and I am you, letting the universe know like it is you, you are it. No, that's very trippy, bear with me. But like I start saying that out loud on my couch of I am you, 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 I am you. And like I wake up saying this fucking magic word. Like immediately wrote all this shit down. And thankfully, like I'd been trying to come up with an idea for like a collective consciousness species similar to like Guyver, and couldn't think of a good name for it. And like, here it was for me. And
there just you go.
Nag that out. And like, just had this vision of Grant Morrison telling me, it's up to you to keep the narrative going forward. And like, that's what got me then to go to the library that weekend and finish turning the second and third part of my comic of Dear David existed, now Dear Mom and Dear Dana, which were the like conversation happening that I had handwritten. Like, I need this in script form now. Like, I'm not gonna say that Grant Morrison astral projected himself into my living room,
But you're not saying that.
What I am saying, though, is my brain took creative works that he created and then made this whole, like, mental experience for me to inspire me to create something. So even if there's nothing outside of myself influencing that, even if it's all just my brain doing some trippy stuff while it's a little sick and just a little off, that's a gift. Like, I've never had a dream like that. I've never had a psychedelic experience that felt quite like this. So like, I felt like I need to put this into, I need to use this. And like, that's the kind of thing I hope to explore, like, in a future podcast, like It's Morphin Time. And yeah, like, again, similar to the Kathmandu experience of Grant Morrison, like, this is the kind of thing I want to be able to put in my comics, of like, ideas spreading into the ideas of, into the heads of others, and spreading the influence of creation through that process.
I mean, like, and clearly you're a Grant Morrison fan, like I am. I have everything from Grant Morrison myself. I love Grant Morrison. And clearly it's one of your influences. Outside of Tokusatsu, what are some of your influences for When We Transform? I mean, besides your, you know, life story and stuff like that, you know, what are some other influences outside of Tokusatsu in our comic book world?
So one really big helpful influence was a movie called Predestination with Ethan Hawke. Y'all heard that one?
Yeah,
that's, I saw that movie, saw this like weird conversation with oneself, with one of you not being aware of it, and was like, okay, that's awesome. And I've got some time travel dynamics. Maybe I can do something like that.
Oh, have you seen Looper?
Oh yeah, I've seen Looper.
Yeah, Looper is, oh, Looper is one of my favorites.
And basically I wanted to combine the feelings of Predestination with like the set piece from Interstellar when Matthew McConaughey is looking at the TV and seeing his kid's life's like progress through the decades right in front of him and like crying and hitting the TV. Like, that's something I'm directly putting into the DNA of the book. Like, rather than Alpha 5, my team has Betamax, a robot literally built from a Betamax player with a TV, and like Betamax tapes are gonna be a big part.
Does Isaac create it, or is it created by Zordon?
My character of Isaac, I think, is in like the main driving factor of like, oh yeah, I've got this one weird specific model of a Betamax player that's built into a TV. Only one of those ever existed. So I sent that to my artist. I'm like, make this a robot. And I did.
Figured it out.
That's going to be kind of the method of like David getting encrypted messages, because like, you can't hack a Betamax player, and no one has a Betamax player. So even if those tapes fall in the wrong hands, people are going to have a hard time intercepting those messages. Yeah, as mentioned, like Evangelion is a big one. Like, I just saw End of Evangelion in IMAX this last weekend. And it kind of broke me, because I'm like, oh my gosh, so much of what I want to do is like right here on screen. Like, crap, they already did this.
You beat me to it. There's a lot of cross thinking when it comes to like comics and any sort of creative thing. There is a lot of cross thinking. Me and Hunter talk about it all the time. Like, it's not a big deal if someone else did it before you. Just do
it's
better.
Just good story. It's like, just good storytelling. Be additive, not reductive, is what I say.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Tokusatsu in general. Like, obviously, like, don't steal things, but like Guyver, for instance, no one's done anything with Guyver for like 30 years. So like, if I pull that, mix it with some elements of Venom, some elements of Alien, and do some collective consciousness bullshit, like, now it's a new thing, Iamu, and like, there we go. And yeah, like, just really the whole Ultra Mega, clearly a big influence. Like, I know that's still within the realm of Tokusatsu, but that's what it kind of set me out of, like, realizing you can tell in a form other than traditional 21 page month to month comics. Like, there's another format out there that you can make for yourself if you have to, and finding ways to like super condense my storytelling. Like, issue one of Ultra Mega gives everything you need to know about the main character in 4 pages. And there's a lot of world building that takes, that it does super subtly and in a condensed way. So like, that's another thing of like, I've just been creating this 1 6 to 8 page story at a time, or one like 20 to 35 page or 35 panel webtoon. So just like chipping away at it, writing what I can afford to commission through artists I've met through like r/hungryartists or r/comic collabs. And yeah, like basically this is how I make the process of writing comics accessible to me as someone who's not working through a publisher or anything.
Right. Trust me, we both know, we know the struggle.
Oh, yeah. we've been trying since, what was it? Mid-COVID we were trying, I think. Yeah. You know, we were trying to do everything.
Supergroup. Yeah, Supergroup was...
Oh, yeah. Our book, written. Supergroup.
Supergroup was written during COVID.
And yeah, Supergroup was almost finished during COVID, and we're still holding on to it.
Yes. That will come out probably the end of this year, early next year.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a wonderful, it's always cool to hear like everyone else's inspiration behind what got them to do their story, because it's cool, because like when you see it, like, oh hey, I know that Easter egg, oh I know that like little nod that happened there, oh I guess, you know, it's not the Jeff Lemire answer where it's like, hey, that was done in like in H.P. Lovecraft. I've never read H.P. Lovecraft before. It's okay to tell you know what your influences are. It's really cool to see like what gets people to where they you know where they get into their mind. Back to your podcasting days, because it's still going on. What was one of your most memorable interviews that you've done on the podcast? Either one of your podcasts.
Yeah, you mentioned before Melissa Flores was a huge one. Is there anyone other than Melissa that you could share?
Let's see. So Sophie Campbell, who technically had on twice, but one of those episodes is lost to time. I just had the most fun time talking to her about Gamera and Nightbreed and like all of these things we have in common. And like, yeah, she's just a writer and artist I respect a lot. Like, what she is to Ninja Turtles, I would someday love to be for Power Rangers.
Nice.
Trying to think of other people I've done recently, or Brian Bucciolato. That one was a big one. And like that took me back to my origins of podcasting. Cause yeah, like my New 52 cast covering The Flash had blown me away, and I really respect hell out of him. Just on Transcending Comics, I recently had Jadzia Axelrod. That was big for me, cause they were like one of the first people I wanted to get, just since like Galaxy the Prettiest Star is like the most mainstream trans comic, so getting someone who's both putting out work like that as such a prominent queer and trans name in the industry, and also one of the original podcasters going back to 2005, like just felt like I was talking to someone so instrumental to the origins of everything I work on here.
I haven't listened to that episode yet. I am excited to check it out though. I like Jadzia.
I will say, like, further inspiration, like, in finding other creatives that have done things similar to me, like, it helps seeing things done that are close to what I wanted to do, but with, like, a different execution. Like, Radiant Black is awesome, and I like how it's trying to mix Invincible and Power Rangers, but, like, it's doing it more as the kind of hero character study of, like, showing how a normal person interacts with these powers and, like, getting hot in this interstellar war. Or like the various trans hero comics I've read, I just noticed like everything is either about the character as they're already trans or as they're coming out. And while I know the issue zero I'm putting out of When We Transform here this August is a coming out story, like a lot of that trans narrative was made because I wanted something that depicts the process of like figuring that out for yourself over a lot of time. Like in the webcomic, David's not going to realize they're trans until like season two at least. Like it's going to take a while. And while I hate that I had to like start with the coming out, like with, I'm calling it issue zero because it's like a pilot proof of concept thing, I also did that because if I only have the ability to make one comic, or if something happens to me that takes away my ability to fund this myself, this is the one story I wanted to tell. And so even if I don't get to that point with the webcomic due to any kind of life circumstance, I at least got to put this out in the world. And like, I'd love to be the first person to create like a proper trans Power Ranger someday. I have ideas for that. And even if I don't, then dang it, I'll invent my own Power Rangers and make one of them trans. And that's what I did.
Hell yeah.
Did you, are you reading Ranger Academy?
I am. Yeah. I even had Maria and Grande Mora on.
Yeah. It's been fantastic. It's so good. I'm like, and that's the first non-binary Power Ranger, canonically. You know, in there. But, you know, it's always cool to see creators, you know, and again, representation matters, you know. Seeing yourself on the page matters. You know, I think people kind of forget that, especially now. Like, it's not about, you know, buttons and quotas and all that. Sometimes it's just a good story that people want to see themselves represented in the medium they love, you know. And it's cool that, one, that you're doing it yourself, you know. You're taking from your own life experience and mixing it. It's not like you're just taking your life experience and going, oh, cool, I can write a comic book about this. No, you're taking all your passions and putting it all together. And that's why when we transform, read so well. It's not someone that thinks, I can write a comic book. Sure, I'll pair an artist and it's fine. You know, you took your passions and mixed it all together and was like, this is me and this is my project. This is my love. And it looks well. So if you never make another issue again, even at all, ever in the future, you know, when we transform is kind of a, like you said before, like it is truly a magnum opus to one, trans heroes. It's a wonderful story about a family, you know, learning and, you know, dealing with a missing child to find out they're back. And it's about acceptance and it's about giant robots and monsters and all the fun stuff that we love. And you did a fantastic job, Zobby. I loved it. And again, I can't keep praising you enough for how great that is. As a fellow Toku creator, as a comic book reader, it's fantastic. You know, like it, and yeah, you can see, like, hey, your love behind everything is in that book.
And I want to plug, like, other major real world influences. This book wouldn't exist if it weren't for my mom and, like, how amazing she was in accepting my coming out and largely doing the lion's share of the work in raising me herself. Like, I wanted to give that experience of having, like, a mom that takes this exactly as you would hope your mom would take this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how much of David and Dana's story is yours. I know probably a lot of it, but I know that you're not, at least I, maybe you are. Maybe you are a Light Patrol, we don't know. But I know you're not a tokusatsu hero, but how much of David and Dana's story, I don't know, maybe. But how? What's underneath that little pommel you got on your microphone? Is your morpher hidden under there? Like, what are we talking about?
Don't worry about it.
But how much of the story is yours? You were just saying that your mother was more than accepting of everything that was going on. And it's very obviously conveyed in the book that the mother is 100%, or maybe not 100, but 99% okay with everything that's going on, minus maybe the time difference. Like, yeah, you could have came to me day one, but you waited a few years. So how much of that kind of is yours, or how much of it is more narrative based?
So I think a lot of it comes with the, like, time dilation and the being glad things went the way they did, even if it wasn't the most direct route. Cause, like, I remember, like, growing up in rural ass Iowa, literally on a former farm, and, like, having these weird, like, thoughts and compulsions toward, like, cross dressing or femininity, and, like, not even knowing what a trans woman was at the time. And, like, whenever I broached the subject, like, in some kind of, like, oh, hey, there's someone like this kinda on TV, like, I could tell, you know, early mid 2000s, my mom, like, didn't have the knowledge or vocabulary to, like, be able to be open and accepting that. But since she's something of a teacher through local community programs, like, I didn't come out until I was 28. Like, I didn't even come to terms with being trans till I was 28. And then I took that and ran with it pretty quick now that it all clicked. But in that time, she met all kinds of, like, trans, non-binary students. Since this was kind of a college prep course or certifications courses that she would help with, she'd get all these papers from students writing about their experiences and, like, actually having research and stuff. And it opened her up mind to so many other things. And on my end, like, I went through the complete cis guy experience that, like, society projects is the right way to go. I went to college, got a good degree, got a good job, got a good house. I got married, and I just wasn't satisfied with that. Like, I got to that point and I'm like, well, what next? Like, I don't want kids. I am not feeling satisfied with this. And like, that marriage didn't work out. No bad feelings toward either of us, though. Like, I think a lot of it was just realizing, like, oh, I don't feel like I can be myself around this person. And it took another year or two after the divorce to realize, like, oh, that was me being trans. That's what I felt like I couldn't be like in front of other people. So, like, I didn't even understand myself. So I hold no ill will to that relationship or anything. And so, like, yeah, like David getting stuck for decades in this weird perpetual transformation phase, I felt like it took me a long time to come to terms with this, but I'm really glad it did, because like, if I had figured this out at 18 or 19, I might have transitioned back then in college and like, yeah, that'd be great. Things would be different. But part of me might always wonder, like, but was that the right decision? And now I'm like, yeah, that was definitely the right decision. I did not like that domestic guy stuff. That sucked.
Yeah, the hindsight's always 20/20, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I'm glad that you're able to find yourself and get, you know, all this positive positivity surrounding you, as at least as far as we're aware. And you were able to put that creative kind of flow that you got from the positive energy into the Morphin Time episode, into your book, into Transcending Comics. Did you always think you were going to be a comic book writer, or did this kind of come with the Morphin Time epiphany?
So I definitely always wanted to be a comic creator since an early age. Like, I had a bunch of little hand-drawn, terribly made comics. Like, Captain Underpants kind of walked you through how to make a comic as a kid, and that was awesome. So I'd fold paper over, do the staple, and like, I had this character Phantom Man I made a few chapters of. And then I had dozens of anything else I could create, of like Putty Man, Fan Man, Turkey Man, like, because it's Thanksgiving. All of them had the exact same origin story of some nuclear waste gets thrown on them, then they stop a burglary, and then
big
four
Turtles
or five
fan.
Issues in. Yeah, like, that's it. That's the entire issue. Almost no variants other than what I drew the character to look like. Once I got into middle school, like, my artistic skill upped itself a bit, but I really could only draw superheroes that like had their masks hidden and like other, or not their, that had their faces hidden and other like bits that are hard to draw, like the various hacks of comics. I could never draw landscapes or scenery or anything like that. And I never really got the basics of it, of like drawing the shapes, then drawing the actual figures over those shapes. And I also got bullied for it a lot in middle school. Like, I tried to vibe with the popular kids in my tiny school of like 200 students total across four grades. And like, yeah, they'd see me drawing like variant Spider-Man costumes or designing my own stuff. And like, that didn't go over the best. And it really wasn't until I hit like senior year that I realized, like, oh, I can like comics and stuff and not feel embarrassed about it. Then like, I got to college and like, I'm honestly really glad I didn't try and pursue like a creative writing degree, because I feel like you're able to learn those skills elsewhere at your own pace. And almost no one is ready to be a professional writer at 23. So,
no.
Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went the computer science route, just because I knew like there were a lot of job openings in that field. Didn't realize that it'd be a stereotype down the line for me. But
maybe it was a sign.
Yeah, but on the plus side, like, it's kept me pretty well accommodated. My job isn't like taxing to the point that I come home like unable to work on my creative projects. And like, really, that's what I would suggest younger people do. Like, just find an industry you think you'll be all right with and something that'll keep you fed and funded. So like, then in your free time, you can pursue those creative passions rather than putting all your eggs in that basket. And like, oh, if your creative skill level and the opportunities to meet that level don't happen to line up when you're 23, you're not screwed in working with a degree that no one wants to hire you with.
It's always fun listening to everyone's story about how they get into like what they love. And I don't know. It's really cool. It's really cool to hear your story. I like, again, everyone should go back and listen to the Morphin Time episode on the Ultra Mega podcast.
Well, I'll throw it in the link somewhere.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, it's truly having Tommy on here and having her tell her story is awesome. And thank you for sharing all the stuff and all the personal stuff and, you know, all the insanity that goes along with being creator and being creative. And thank you. And it's not like the sign off or anything. This is me just thanking you for coming on and stuff. Before I forget to thank you later, because sometimes I forget to thank my guests when they're on. I'm like, oh, let me shoot you a text. Like, hey, thanks for coming on. Mm-hmm. You know, and you've been more than open on the episode. And it's been one of our, I'll say this now because I can say this on air. One of our best interviews we've done. You know, because you can tell that how much passion you have behind the stuff, you know, you're working on and the stuff you've created so far. From your podcast, from Ultra Mega, you get to ask them one fun question at the end. So I'm going to do that to you. If you could write one of the big two comic series, what would it be and why?
I'm going to throw out a couple out there because, like, I'll botch it if I just try and pick one. Oh, actually, so I'll do at least one for each company. For Marvel, I want to write that new Warriors comic that never came to light, that everyone was pissed about, with heroes like Screen Time and Snowflake. Because, like, one of the earliest ideas, like, before When We Transform had formed, like, it was Pride Month, and I was seeing all these new flags. I was still thinking I was a straight guy at the time. Like, these flags are neat. I wish I had an easy way to remember them all. And I was like, well, wait, I love Power Rangers. If I commission an artist to draw Pride flag themed Power Rangers, like, that'll help. And it did. And I started designing, like, Pride flag related Rangers and stuff. Still have that drawing somewhere around. And I had this whole idea around that I would instead put to New Warriors. Of like, okay, I get the backlash around it. Like, those names were ridiculous. Not all of it was warranted. I don't like the hate it received for a book that never took the light of day. And comic skaters still use it as a talking point when it didn't come out. But I want to make the book that's, like, self-aware about that. Like, let's make it a company that's like Roxxon or Oscorp or something that's trying to improve their image and, like, specifically going toward, like, either different queer groups, different marginalized groups. And, like, okay, we got the non-binary one. We got the trans one. We got the agender one. And, like, these characters are like, okay, I'm glad I get to represent the world as, like, a trans superhero. There are other things about me. And, like, they start to clash with their corporation of, like, wanting to actually do effective change in the world. And the company's like, oh, no, we don't do that. We just do, like, ads that make us look good. Yeah, maybe the company gets pissed at one of them and, like, withholds their robot or something. And, like, so it's not just heroes versus monsters. It's, like, heroes versus monsters versus some kind of, like,
that's the so boy awesome. That's style actually a cool idea.
Holding
that's actually
corporation.
Really. Well, if Marvel doesn't want it, you always got one in the bank then.
For DC, like, Nightwing is my favorite superhero. Yeah, Tom Taylor is doing so good at it, though. So, like, I want to write Nightwing maybe after someone else comes and gets that initial wave of, like, it's not Tom Taylor anymore, that disappointment. Like, the next person could be awesome, and they're probably going to receive some backlash because they're not Tom Taylor. Otherwise, OMAC, the new 52 one, like, at the time we read it for the podcast, I thought that was, like, the worst podcast, or that was the worst comic we'd read, period. Now that I understand a bit more about, like, what they were going for, and have also had people read it outside of, like, the rest of the new 52, just its own thing, I think there's actually a lot of really good creative potential there. And the way that character has been treated through the years, like, he's still around there, like, me and Jason have manifested him back into existence. Like, the week after we talked about that, here it's 2021, and now they're on the cover of a comic again. Like, we did this. We willed this into existence. And me and Jason have, like, talked a lot about ideas of where we'd want to see that go. Like, maybe do some kind of villain thing, because a lot of superheroes screwed that character over in-universe. There's a lot of potential there for, like, an understandable villain arc. I won't go too far into potential details because, like, that's kind of me and Jason's thing, and, like, some of what I would pull would definitely come from him, so it wouldn't be fair. I've found the key here. Like, if I ever get that call from Marvel or DC, I'm not asking to write Spider-Man or the X-Men.
I'll do a six-issue OMAC.
You have
go.
To put out, like, 40 books a month. Give me this one. That
Yeah, it's OMAC. Whatever.
Yeah, let's do it.
It fails, whatever.
It's fine. It's you picked it up for another 6 years of copyright. It's fine. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It sells.
If I do an okay job, I will be the Michael Jordan of writing.
I love when people like have like off the cuff like things. I have a whole Booster Gold pitch that I wrote out.
His Booster Gold book is so good.
20. Everyone that's seen my Booster Gold book loves it so far. It's like 25 issues, 4 annuals, like spin-off books. So like I wouldn't eat. I love Booster Gold. But yeah, like I love when people like tell us like, oh yeah, I write this like cool. Like Z-list character.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love it when they give us Obscurios, like Sleepwalker or Darkhawk. Those are some of my favorite obscure characters. I love it when somebody's like, "I want to write Frankenstein, Agent of Shade again. Let's go."
My dream comic, though, would be to write like at least a mini series on Power Rangers Zeo or Turbo, and I have pitches for those, but I'll bite my tongue on them because, like, hey, if Boom ever listens to this, like. I'll give them directly to you. I don't want to put those out into the ether, but I'll just say, like, Tommy becoming a stock car racer, I can make that make perfect sense. And I have a solid argument for that, of why that's the perfect job. I'll tell you off air, but yeah, a couple things I want to plug. So When We Transform is going to launch in August on Kickstarter. You can find it either by just going to whenwetransform.com. If you search it on YouTube, we've got a 1 minute trailer that could use some views. Or if the redirect URL doesn't work, just go to Kickstarter and search When We Transform. After that, we'll probably launch the webtoon to a subscriber base through either Patreon or Substack that following month in August, and just put out what we've got so far, kind of fund it as it's coming out, and then eventually release that like in collected trade form and also to webtoon for like just being out there in digital perpetuity. As for things that don't exist yet, and might not for a minute, but I think will be really up your alley. I'm sorry I got on a whole tangent about my second weird experience with Grant Morrison, but what I really am hoping to do next isn't telling more about my weird experiences. I want to start yet a third podcast, running title of Living Narratives, just dedicated to taking like the most interesting people I know and turning their like most defining moments into episodes like It's Morphin Time, where like I incorporate music throughout and a lot of stylistic elements. And I'm currently working with my first guest, who's a good friend of my girlfriend and I, a model named Rachel Barcelona. She's the current Miss Florida USA runway model, currently in New York doing some projects. She's in an upcoming indie film called Megan's Voice. And she's even spoken at the UN because they're a huge autism advocate because they have autism themselves and are like maybe the most successful openly autistic model. And they're just a really awesome and influential, an awesome and interesting, inspiring person. I kind of have a structure for how I want to put narrative to their life of going from like being a bullied child that's like ostracized for having autism to eventually finding their voice and speaking at the UN. And I've got a couple others in the pipeline that'll be there as well, but each of these episodes is going to take like at least 2 or 3 months to make. So Living Narratives is probably going to take a minute to come out, but I hope to make a podcast that has wider appeal than my niche interests and is just also not like podcasts people have heard elsewhere before. If any musicians or editors or anyone out there that would want to contribute to a project like that, do reach out to me. You can find me through my social media pages for my podcasts, or look me up as Tommy Trimbath or keymastercollective.com. We'll point you toward a lot of my stuff. And yeah, just reach out if this is something you think you'd want to contribute to, because this is going to be a very challenging very challenging project to run on my own. So getting outside collaborators would be super helpful in the process.
This is awesome. I love like one, you're starting a third podcast, which is insane. I don't know how you have time or energy. So very kudos to you. We'll have all the links for everything in our descriptions, and please follow Tommy and all her socials. Because I can't wait to show off the world all your cool stuff on my socials, like I do every episode of Ultraman. And the idea of like having these like personalized interviews on these bigger grand levels is awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a really great first experience for getting interviewed. I've been really excited to finally be on the other side of the process. And yeah, y'all have been great. I love the stuff you're putting out. I'm really excited to see more about Toku USA. Honestly, you're bringing to life a lot of the things Jason and I had wanted to do when setting out to do this. And instead, that shape's just changed. And I'm really glad to see there's other podcasters out there carrying the torch and just doing something to mobilize all these tokusatsu inspired writers and artists out there.
Guys, I am going to wrap all of us up. We're not doing book reviews today because we have an awesome interview. So make sure you check out Tommy and all her on her stuff. And guys, thanks for listening. You can head over to our website, androidscomics.com, to check out this week's previews and new releases. Follow us on Instagram at androids_comics, the podcast Instagram at Androids Amazing Podcast, on X at Androids Amazing for up-to-date news, stuff I forget to post during the week. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share with a friend. And as always, guys, support your local comic shop and have a nice day.
Peace.
Bye.